that is exactly why the privatisation of Medicare is something that has to be fought against. Labor's been fighting against Liberal attacks on Medicare ever since we brought it in.
Welcome to this week's edition of Eye on the Peninsula, Tuesday the 28th of June, with ALP candidate Peter Murphy discussing the Liberal privatisation of Medicare. We'll hear more from Ms Murphy later in the program about what she thinks the Liberals want to do with Medicare. Good afternoon, I'm Piers Cunningham, broadcasting from the RPPFM studios in Mornington. This is the last Eye on the Peninsula program before the election, when we vote for the party who we think will do the best job to govern Australia. Whether your preference is the two major parties, minor parties or independents, Eye on the Peninsula has interviewed candidates across the seats of Dunkley and Flinders in past months to hopefully provide a better understanding on what each candidate is standing for in their electorate. Today we open with the latest news on the Baxter Rail Line. We also speak to the two major party candidates in the seat of Dunkley as they sum up their election campaign. We head to the streets of Mornington to find out what people really think about the election and why should we be swimming in winter and why Frankston City Mayor Councillor James Dooley is not apologising for the blowout costs of the Wells Street upgrade. Good news for locals who travel to the Frankston-Baxter train line, with a re-election announcement made by Federal Minister for Major Projects, the Honourable Paul Fletcher, during a visit to Baxter train station last Thursday. Liberal candidate for Dunkley, Chris Crowther, shared the announcement of the important program with Frankston Mayor Councillor James Dooley and Frankston City Councillor Darryl Taylor. Deborah Maher captured the moment, starting with Minister Fletcher addressing the Assembly.
I'm very pleased to be here with Chris Crowther, the Liberal candidate for Dunkley, who's been working very, very hard to make the case in Canberra for the things that Dunkley needs, the things that his community needs, in order to improve services and get better outcomes. And one of the issues that Chris has been really focused on is the question of the rail connection into the city. And of course, at this point, it's a single line, non-electrified. Chris has been really making the case on this issue, speaking up for the community. And so what we're announcing today is a $4 million commitment from the Turnbull government to the Dunkley Rail Transport Plan. And the intention here is to have a very comprehensive study into what needs to be done and how we do it and what the costs will be of several key components. This is a very significant commitment by the Turnbull government, and it really does reflect the advocacy from Chris.
Chris Crowther explains the several key components and how the $4 million re-election promise will be spent.
This is a major announcement of $4 million for the Dunkley rail plan for this community. As Paul said, it's $2 million towards the first component, which is the electrification and duplication to Baxter, which benefits Frankston, it benefits Baxter, Langwarrin with a station there, as well as Frankston South. We'll also benefit through the university access through Leawarra Station. In addition, we're actually going to look at a new station for Frankston Hospital as well. Many people in the community have said to me that there's an issue around parking, there's an issue around access to Frankston Hospital. This will resolve that and provide that necessary access. The second component is $2 million for a Frankston Flyer for express services between Frankston and the city. At the moment, you have stopping all station trains and express trains bumping up the back of one another. This will mean a 30-minute city. It's an enormous announcement today for the community.
Deborah asked the Minister when the study would commence if the Turnbull government is re-elected.
Typically a study of this scale, say significant amount of time, probably looking at, I would think, 12 to 18 months to get the work done properly. And one of the big blockers to anything happening here has been that there has been no robust and reliable and dependable planning work done. And I do want to emphasise that the funding we've allocated is considerably more than the Labor Party has said that they would allocate, and that our funding goes to additional elements, including looking at this notion of the express service into the city and what additional track would be needed along that route.
Frankston City Mayor Councillor James Dooley had previous discussions with the Minister concerning Frankston's progress and future, claiming...
So I gave him this big spiel about where Frankston was going and how it had come along and just how much we had done of recent. But the thing that really needed to happen was this electrification to Baxter and what it would mean for the people of Lang Warren and South Frankston, and what it would mean to basically be able to get people into TAFE, into the university, into the hospital, from both ways, up and down the line, what it would mean for the traders in Frankston who'd need more car parking. And this announcement, it's very welcome going forward, and it's something that the Turnbull government has basically taken on board.
The Turnbull government is investing a total of $7.6 billion in Victorian infrastructure, of which $858 million will go towards Melbourne Metro. While Crewther made this announcement last week, ALP candidate Peter Murphy says she made the same election promise some weeks ago.
What the Liberal candidate has done is matched what I committed to 6 weeks ago. So, in fact, 6 weeks ago, Anthony Albanese and I committed to do the business case for the electrification and duplication of the line to Baxter. And there's been 6 weeks of silence from the Liberals, and, you know, at the doorstep of the election, they come out and make an announcement. So I welcome the fact that they've adopted what I announced. And we said 6 weeks ago we will do a proper, thorough business case, and we'll do it starting the day after we get elected so that it can go to Infrastructure Australia. That is a credible policy that we've had out there for a long time. The second half of the policy announced by the Liberals today is not credible, what they're suggesting they would be able to deliver in terms of a fast train from Frankston. And I personally think coming out with that sort of idea now is a pretty cynical ploy at the last minute of the election.
What about the Frankston Hospital line? They want to put a station there as well, because we know that area gets a bit congested.
Parking has been an issue at that hospital, but I also know that the hospital and the state government are working on it. I also know, because I've been part of this community for years, that there was an extensive public consultation around the Frankston train precinct redevelopment, and Peninsula Health and the hospital were part of that. They were represented on the board and on the station task force board, and have never once asked for a train station. And they didn't even know that it was being announced. It's just a sort of an idea that popped into the head of the Liberals at the last minute. What we have done when we've announced our serious policy, which was based on the consultation with the community and all of the stakeholders, is talked about a business case which says, where do we need new stations? And that fits with the consultation and all of the work that's been done previously. It's not just a thought bubble at the last moment.
Either way, it looks like local commuters will get the electrification and duplication of the Frankston and Baxter train lines. Let's hope it will be delivered. Up now, ALP and Liberal candidates for Dunkley Peter Murphy and Chris Crewther speak about the last showdown before the election. And later, will Mornington Peninsula Councillor David Garnock be swimming in board shorts or budgie smugglers when he and the Shire's Mayor, Councillor Graham Pittock, take to the pool to raise funds for MS? Deborah Maher's dubbed the federal election campaign as lackluster and short of real content. But does ALP candidate Peter Murphy and Liberal candidate Chris Crewther, who are risking all for top spot in the seat of Dunkley, believe that? Can either of them get their party over the line come election day with disillusioned voters planning to support independent candidates or micro-parties? Deborah spoke to Ms. Murphy and Mr. Crewther about their positioning in the election and what they're promising their constituents. Deborah Maher begins with, what are the main focuses of the campaign for both parties? Ms. Murphy?
It's been a really great campaign here in Dunkley. As you know, we've been doing a lot of grassroots community campaigning, a lot of conversations directly with people, and we're getting really great feedback. People are excited about the plan that we have for Dunkley. So that, in addition to all those really great commitments to school funding with Gonski, bulk billing for Medicare and making sure that pathology, imaging, mammograms, we don't have to pay out of pocket. All of that combined with a really exciting announcement yesterday about accelerated rollout of NBN fibre to the home under Labor just shows that we've got this coordinated package about infrastructure, community and the future, and people are loving it.
Mr. Crewther's response to the question about his main focus.
As a local, I'm quite passionate about the community and making a difference here in the Frankston community and in the whole of Dunkley. Been listening to people right across the electorate about what they need, and I've been advocating on their behalf. Things I'm passionate about being a young person myself is helping engage young people in education, in activities, in employment, and which feeds into developing young people to be, I guess, successful in the long run.
And what about all those millions of dollars worth of election promises? Ms. Murphy?
We've made an announcement of a $20 million investment into a new Institute of Higher Education at Chisholm-TAFE, which is a partnership between TAFE, universities and, very importantly, industry. $2.2 million investment in a new acute mental health unit at the Frankston Hospital, so when people turn up in times of acute mental health stress, they don't have to wait in the waiting room. That, combined with Labor's commitment to funding Headspace, is really popular in Dunkley. We made commitment to a $1.5 million business case for the electrification and duplication of the train line to Baxter. You know, from day one, that's really been welcomed.
And this from the Liberal camp.
Some of the things we've secured so far are the electrification and duplication between Frankston to Baxter, a business plan to fully cost that, as well as the $2 million for a Frankston Flyer, which will enable a express service plan between Frankston and the city, which we will enable very fast train services on a dedicated third track between Frankston and the city. One other thing is we're a hub for health, we're a hub for education, transport and jobs. So one of the issues that was raised with me is the fact that the MRI at the local Frankston Hospital is not fully subsidised. So people either have to go to the private hospital or outside of the region to get a fully subsidised bulk-billed MRI. And managed to secure $6 million to provide fully bulk-billed Medicare scans at the Frankston Hospital. That will benefit over 2,000 patients per year, and it was the number one health issue in the region. So that's just two of the announcements I've made.
Has the CFA fiasco and thuggish behaviour of Mr Shorten and Mr Andrews given Mr Crowther an opportunity to win votes? His reply?
Obviously, it's a very complicated and difficult issue. We have nothing against better pay and better conditions for paid CFA and paid firefighters, but any volunteers, as I've noticed previously, are very concerned about essentially being this agreement being rammed through and the union control would give over their activities. They feel like they weren't properly consulted, and we've had unions actually at polling booths handing out against us and against the volunteers as well. I think what Daniel Andrews and Bill Shorten, in terms of supporting Daniel Andrews, have done is simply not good enough. And that's why we're actually going to change at the federal level the Fair Work Act to better protect CFA and also other volunteers across the community, whether they're in SES or otherwise, because we really need to protect the 60,000 volunteers who do a great job in our community.
Ms Murphy was asked if she still believes the Turnbull government will privatise Medicare.
I think it's in the DNA of the Liberal Party. They've already privatised storage of cancer diagnosis records. We know that they commissioned a Productivity Commission report looking at privatisation of a lot of social services, including Medicare. We know that it was on the table until Malcolm Turnbull was forced to say, oh, I'm not going to do it now, because the community doesn't want it. Medicare is a public institution. Universal health care is one of the bedrocks of what is great about government and Australian society. In Australia, you can get access to healthcare based on your Medicare card, not your credit card. The first step along a path towards the American system, where people who are working, let alone people who aren't in a position to be able to work, can't get access to healthcare. That is exactly why the privatisation of Medicare is something that has to be fought against. Labor's been fighting against Liberal attacks on Medicare ever since we brought it in.
This from Mr Crowther about the NBN rollout, which he believes will be done sooner under Liberal, different to that of Labor's current plan.
Well, we're certainly not slowing it down. We're actually speeding it up, and actually our rollout will be quicker than the NBN under Labor, and it's something that's very important in terms of connectivity in the community, and something I'm fighting hard on to make sure that each area within the Dunkley electorate is connected with NBN services sooner rather than later. Unfortunately, under Labor's plan, the cost associated with that and the length of time is simply not good enough. People need faster internet access sooner.
Ms Murphy disagrees and says the NBN rollout is on track and will not be slowed down as Mr Crowther has suggested.
There's some areas in Dunkley which luckily got Labor's fibre to the home from when we were last in government, and what we announced yesterday is not only will we, for the areas that haven't got anything at the moment, not even Turnbull second-rate copper NBN, we will give them fibre to the home, but we're going to accelerate that rollout. Lane Warren South, Frankston CBD, Frankston South, areas of Baxter, Mornington and Mount Eliza, which have really been struggling with no NBN, let alone the real proper NBN, we're going to bring that forward. That's a big announcement. Families, students and not to mention businesses who complain to me all the time about lack of access to proper internet are really going to benefit under a Labor government.
Malcolm Turnbull and his Health Minister Susan Lee are at odds over Headspace funding, with Lee claiming that the Turnbull government can only guarantee $200 million funding for Headspace beyond 2018. Can Mr. Crowther guarantee funds for Headspace beyond 2018?
I did meet with Headspace, and that is one of the things I've been advocating very hard on, sure that they do have the funding that they need, and that any funding shortfall is made up, and is an important service for the community and for mental health, particularly for young people. So it's important that it is funded as needed, so it is something that I have been advocating. Other services in the community, so recently, for example, we released $5.6 million for ICE rehabilitation services in the region, so organisations like Step It Up, which is right next to Headspace in Frankston, and a number of other rehabilitation and counselling services to help people who are addicted to ICE and other drugs.
The current Galaxy polling in Dunkley has Liberals at 53% and Labor trailing by 6%. Does Mr. Crowther take polls seriously?
Look, I try not to concentrate on polling. I try to actually just do my best on behalf of the community and continue to work hard. Obviously, there has been polling done, as you would have seen. That news poll which came out recently, which has us slightly ahead at the moment. But I'm not taking it for granted. I'm going to be working extremely hard right after the election and beyond to represent the community.
This election campaign has been one of the longest in Australia for years. What have the Dunkley candidates learned about themselves? Ms. Murphy?
I am someone who wants to be positive and get out there and be part of really big, great conversations. And I've learned about myself that I have to be a bit tough because, you know, there are personal attacks that have been thrown at me and negativity. And I've learned that I have the capacity to be able to weather that. And it's been an incredibly long campaign. You know, I think I've learnt about myself that I really do enjoy being part of talking to people in the community. And I have to rein in my excitement because there's so many things that I am so excited about sort of being able to deliver and be part of if I got elected. But I just have to keep going and focus on the election day and not get excited about the possibility of, you know, these great projects that will make our community better that I really want to be part of.
And what about Mr. Crowther? What has he learned about himself?
I think any campaign is obviously a lot of hard work. It's 20-hour days, 7 days a week. It's about resilience, so you have to have a tough skin. So I guess strength of me as a person as well, and more to be a very strong advocate on behalf of the community and making sure that the community's voice is heard in Canberra and make sure we get things done. That's what I've done during this campaign for a number of announcements, whether it be the Mornington Little Ass track or the room to move, the parking that's down at the corner of Nepean Highway and Canadian Bay Road. These are community-led grassroots advocacy on behalf of the community that I've worked with in terms of responding to ensure that we have outcomes. And that's what I want to do as a representative as well, with strong outcomes on behalf of the community. And that's the most important thing.
Is it as hard as you thought it would be, or is it harder?
Oh, everything. I don't come into things with any false expectations, of course. I did expect it to be hard work, and it has, of course, been hard work, but hard work is necessary to get things done for the electorate, and I'll continue to work extremely hard if I have the honour of being elected.
What is the first thing they'll do in office if they're elected? The last question put to the Liberal and Labor candidates. This is from Ms. Murphy.
I tell you what the first thing I will do is to make sure all of the amazing people who have volunteered their time and effort to help me are properly thanked, because it would be an absolute privilege to be elected. I couldn't be more honoured. But the other privilege that I have had is these amazing people. Some of whom have volunteered to help me because they believe in the Labor Party and the ideals of the Labor Party. Others who have come up to me and said, I met you at, you know, such and such an event, or, you know, I've heard about you and I want to give you my time and help you. And so,
what about for the people of Dunkley? What's the first thing you do for them?
Oh, look, the first thing I do is sit down with the list of commitments and call up all the heads of the departments and say, right, you have to start working on this right now, because we need this mental health unit. The schools need the Gonski funding. You know, we need to get this electrification of the Baxter line. We need the Kringle Bulls Football Netball Club, the Frankston Basketball Stadium, you know, the Peninsula Transport Assist. I haven't had a chance to even talk about that. That's a fabulous organisation that we've committed money to. You know, I can't wait to be able to work with the Peninsula Waves for their high performance pathways for young girls and women to be able to get into elite netball. You know, so I'll just be ringing all the department heads.
Wow.
I don't care what the other electorates or the other members of parliament say, you have to do mine first.
And Mr. Crowther.
But the first thing is, I think, is of course setting up the office and making sure we have the systems in place to properly represent the electorate and to respond as quickly as possible and to see through a number of the commitments that I've made, whether it be on the MRI, whether it be on the sporting commitment, the ice and drug money that I've put forward, or a number of other commitments to the community that I've made on rail and other things, to actually see those through to completion, to make sure if I'm fulfilling my promises. I'm a person who believes in under-promising and over-delivering, so my plan is to deliver for the community from day one.
We wish Ms. Murthy and Mr. Crowther, including the other candidates, all the best for the election. Make sure you make your vote count and keep the elected candidate accountable for all their promises they announced during their campaign. Back soon with an independent standing for the seat of Flinders. Then we'll hear from people in the street about who they think will win on July the 2nd.
98.7, 98.3, RPPFM Peninsula Radio.
Some passionate locals are standing in this election as independents, believing they can make a difference. But when push comes to shove, do they really have the smarts and guts to stand up in Parliament to represent local people? Do Australians really take them seriously? Some would say yes, because of the cynicism and distrust of Turnbull and Shorten's policies and promises. Iron the Peninsula has given people standing as independents in the upcoming election a good go at spruiking what they stand for and changes they want to make. Another independent we discuss matters with is Shane W. Lewis, representing himself in the seat of Flinders. We begin with, what conversation does he want to have in Parliament?
Before I was nominated, I walked around the electorate for about 3 weeks and I talked to 360-odd people, and the vast majority of people gave me a good consensus to run. Basically, for the last 16 years, I've been a public advocate in Victoria, helping people with mental health problems and trying to get them better care in the mental health process within the state government of Victoria. I've worked with families and individuals who've had serious assaults and different things happen to them, and we've been, as a charity, and I've got a bit of a collection of people in the community, and we actually have been helping people for 16 years. I think I've got a pretty thick skin, considering I've been a public advocate working with people who've been pretty seriously hurt under the current State Government Health Act. I think the process of what people see the political system going now, they want to change where people they can trust, people who really represent them, people who are strong. And I think I can fit that for sure. I'm very dedicated to community and I'll fight for it.
How seriously do people take you?
From the consensus I've had now, and I've talked to well over 1,000 people through the electorate, right from Phillip Island all the way to Portsea, the vast majority of people, well over 90%, would vote me in.
Why is that?
I think when I get to talk to them, they realise the work I've been doing for the community. I've been dedicated to the community for 18 years now, doing serious community work in a lot of different fields, on educational programs from children to mental health reforms. And basically, they see that that's a really valuable behaviour for their representative.
Are constituents disillusioned and disengaged with the two major preferred parties?
Absolutely.
And in what way?
When I say basically, have you got a preference, or do you like Labor or Liberal, they just turn off. They've turned off from politics in general. Mm-hmm. There's a big movement in our society right now where they're very concerned about where our political parties, both sides, are. I believe that people are basically just waking up to the point that things aren't changing, either Liberal or Labor. Personally, I know we're over $1 trillion in debt, this country. I know your children are going to be probably paying that debt. I know we've just had a so-called mining boom, and I would say a mining boom from post-World War II, when technologies of mining were advanced. So we've had a huge amount of resources in this country disappear.
What about distrust, though? Do you think that there could be a bit of that in there as well?
Well, if we're $1 trillion in debt and we've just had a mining boom, the equations aren't there, are they? Mm. We've had 600 companies in 2014 and 2015 not pay 1 cent tax, the top companies. So our representatives have failed us. And I must say this, Greg Hunt has been a great guy with me in the community for the many programs I've been involved in with environment and early educational programs with children. He was a great advocate and a helper. So as a man, I think Greg Hunt's a great guy. But the Liberal Party and the Labor Party, I do not see eye to eye with, with those sorts of equations of our massive debt.
So where don't you think that Greg Hunt is then representing the people?
He's being told by his superiors what to do.
Well, Mr. Hunt has a very safe seat in Flinders. What percentage of the vote do you hope to get? You must have a gut feeling of how much you're going to swing.
If the thousand people I talked to voted, I would get 92% of the vote. I believe that. Maybe some of them were over-medicated, maybe some of them might have been a bit mentally ill, but the vast majority were very serious when it came to the issues we were talking about, and the issues were they want better representation. They believe the political parties are not representing them. They're representing other interests. Now, there's a huge awakening about the value of community. I think we've sort of, after World War II, I'm a behavioralist. I've been studying the generational conditioning of our society for post-World War II to present day. And I think after the war, there was a great need and a great movement where family, extended family, were really the value. And then slowly but surely, we sort of became a bit more materialistic and moved away from community. And now we're a bit more of a consumer system, and I think people are seeing that that's not the system they want their children to have. And, you know, it's obvious that the vast majority of people I'm talking to want change.
And to wrap it up, this from Shane, advising how he would go about standing and representing the people in the seat of Flinders.
What are you going to tell them? You know, you're standing for them, you've been out in the community, you've heard what they've had to say. How can you be the person that, for them, and represent them?
Firstly, I'd make sure that there was big community meetings that people were invited to within my electorate, and we would get together as a community, as a representative should, and I'd be hearing their concerns and getting the priority, say 10 priorities, and then trying to address those priorities for my electorate. I've been studying generational social psychological conditioning of the consumer system we're in.
With all that study, how's that going to help you? How can you be the person that, for them, and represent them?
In the division of Flinders, I hope to get not just myself, I hope to get other brains and other brilliant people to talk and work as a community addressing certain issues, because we really need to look after our community, and we're not.
I'm sure there are some communities in the seat of Flinders who will align themselves with Shane's beliefs and moral standing. Ahead, the last of our election interviews with independent hopeful Chris Harve. And later, Frankston City Mayor Councillor James Dooley on Wells Street improvements, putting a positive spin on the project. So we've got Chris Harve while we're on the subject of politics in the lead up to the federal election this Saturday. And Chris Harve is the founder of the Australian Donkey Party. One of the things that it's interested in is reforming the Australian political system. And I'll let Chris tell you more about that. Chris, can you tell us what's in the name? Why did you call your party the Donkey Party, please?
Yeah, sure, Piers. Well, the Donkey Party came about in the lead up to the 2013 election, when we were facing the unenviable task of potentially having to re-elect the Rudd government or put Tony Abbott's Liberal Party into power. And a lot of people at the time seemed to be not particularly keen on voting for either of the major parties. And the concept of a donkey vote came about. And so that sort of sprung into the idea into action that maybe a party called Donkey Party would be able to officially register this type of discontent with inside the voters of Australia.
And just give us a bit of background, because it's just for anyone out there who's interested to know, what's the process of getting involved in the Australian political system? What sort of hoops do you need to jump through to get involved?
If you're looking to establish a political party in Australia, it's surprisingly straightforward. You basically just make an application to the Australian Electoral Commission. They have a pretty simple criteria of what a party has to be. And essentially you need 500 members mm-hmm. who are all signed up on a written, handwritten or typed register, members yep. register. The party has to have a constitution, i.e. it has to sort of outline its objectives and what the party intends to try to achieve. It's basically, it can be quite a simple document. And you have to nominate a few office bearers, such as secretaries and so forth, and pay $500 and you're in.
Right, so 500 names, addresses, they've got to be on the electoral roll anyway, which everyone over 18 theoretically is in Australia.
Correct.
And they've got to sign saying they support the party. Electoral roll, I think you said to me off air that they will actually randomly call, you know, a bunch of people on that list just to make sure that you haven't just falsified the whole thing, gone through the telephone book or white pages or whatever?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Now, you mentioned to me that your party isn't at that stage. You've been building it up since 2013, and you're hoping that by the next federal election, you will actually have those 500 signatures and you'll be registered with the AEC.
Yeah, that's correct, Piers. To find 500 signatures and willing members of a party, it does actually take quite a bit of groundwork. And once you've run out of friends and family and sympathetic Facebook friends, then you're really confronted with the only option of going out to the general public and trying to canvass members that way.
Door knocking and shopping centres, all that sort of stuff.
Correct.
Now, look, you've mentioned in this discussion, we've mentioned that the Australian Donkey Party stands for reform of the Australian electoral system. What kind of reforms do you believe are necessary and why?
Big question. Simple answers. Basically, there's a large level of discontent, you could say, around the world, you know, in terms of the way that the political process and system has been operating. We've seen it recently in Britain, obviously last weekend with Brexit. You can see all the you can see it across the Atlantic in America, currently with the vote for Trump and also for Bernie Sanders. And essentially, it seems to be a global phenomenon. The people are basically sick and tired and fed up with the existing system. So, Donkey Party, as a process of structuring its constitution, realised that really the biggest problem is that we believe is that the underlying structure of the Australian political system needs to be rebuilt mm-hmm. and redesigned.
Mm-hmm. What kind of structural changes do you think? For example, a lot of people believe that we're over-governed in Australia. Would that be part of that reform process, addressing over-government?
Well, absolutely. You know, we've got a population in Australia of about 25 million people. Now, if you go over to Japan and find yourself flying into Tokyo, you'll be flying into a city that has, in its greater boundaries, about 20 million people. So if you boil that back to Australia, we're looking at three levels of official government: federal, state and local government, plus all the quasi-regulations that go along with the corporate industry and complying with their requirements. So we're incredibly regulated and unnecessary, and Donkey Party believes unnecessarily so.
So would you eliminate, if you were going to be sort of changing the three tiers, federal, state and local, which or all would you be addressing in that?
Well, we'd like to address all three levels, basically. Mm-hmm. Reforming of the federal system would be the top priority, followed by potentially, and how we would approach that is really looking at the way the parliament works in terms of the members that have been elected to parliament. You know, currently you've got this two-party preferred system where you essentially end up with a Labor-Liberal sort of candidate who wins a majority of the vote after preferences if they're unable to win 50% of the primary vote off their own bat. Now, that is not the way the UK does it. The UK basically says it's first past the post, so if you get 40% of the vote and no one has got any more votes than that, then you're the elected member. So part of it, the reform would be to look at the preferencing system that we use here in Australia. And then the second thing that we would want to look at is the actual structure of the way that the parliament works with a shadow ministry. Right. Essentially, we have an option of an opposition who sit in shadow to the elected government, which is basically any party that can win more than 76 seats in the parliament. So what we would be proposing at Donkey Party is to say that anyone who's been elected into the chamber of the lower house, or the Senate for that matter, is the government. There is no shadow government, and you all can work out and debate and discuss and vote on bills and policy.
Wow, okay, well that looks like some pretty major reforms required there, probably amending the constitution, referenda, notoriously hard to get up in Australia, but good luck to you, Chris. That's Chris Harve speaking regarding his party, the Australian Donkey Party, which is hoping to be a registered party with the Australian Electoral Commission next election, not this, so look out for the Donkey Party then. Thanks, Chris. People in the seats of Dunkley and Flinders will speak through their numbers penciled on the ballot paper next Saturday. But what is the general consensus on our local streets when people were asked who they thought would win the election? Deborah Marr compiled this Pulse of the People report.
Mr Turnbull with a hung Senate, tied Senate.
I agree the same.
Oh, I'm thinking probably Labor. Yeah, Labor.
You happy about that?
Yes, I think so.
Malcolm Turnbull.
Malcolm Turnbull.
Why do you pick that?
I think he's got more in his head than the other guy.
Yes, he's the man for the job, definitely.
Who do you think will win the election?
No comment.
Oh, I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't follow politics.
That's all right. Who do you think will win the election?
Labour. Right.
I think the Liberals will have it.
I think the Libs will get it.
Is that a good thing to think?
Either of them a good thing?
I would love for the Liberals to win, but you never know.
Do you know any of your candidates here?
No. Yeah. We know Hunt and Morrison. We know some of them. Yeah.
like I say, we'll just take it as it comes, and no, it should be good. Like I say, I reckon Eddie McCourt should be running, but we'll wait and see how this one goes. We'll go from there.
I really wouldn't like to have a guess, to be honest.
I have really no idea at all of which way it will go.
Are you happy with it though? Are you happy with the campaign?
To be honest, I haven't really taken a lot of notice of it. You know, you just hear from both sides and you don't know who to believe.
I don't think you need to.
That's all right.
What about you?
Darren Hinch. I hate them, yeah.
Do you know any of the candidates?
What's his name? Chris Kruder, yeah. He's been at Seaford Station a lot of mornings, because I get the train into the city every morning.
Well, we think the Liberals will win, you know. The CFA has obviously done a lot of damage to Labor, and we both work in the public service.
Traditionally, as Labor voters, they're big Labor supporters, and it's Labor has indicated that they'd give the public servants a much better deal, as they generally do anyway.
No, so that's why we would probably go the way of Labor, because it, you know, I mean, even though it's not, they're obviously not going to win.
Do you believe Turnbull when he says he's not going to vote council?
I don't think we ever believe anything, you know.
I think it's going to be close, sir.
The boring election campaign.
Boring election, yeah. Where's Trump when you need him, man? Yeah. Oh, I've had it with all of them, man.
Turn this off. I think I've got enough.
I think we've all had enough. Next, the Mayor of Frankston talking up the Wells Street project. And lastly, swimming in winter and the MS fundraiser at Pelican Park in Hastings.
This is 98.7, 98.3 RPPFM.
Retailers in Wells Street, Frankston are fed up. The Wells Street project, which set out to be a 3-month development, is still not completed with time costs blowouts. The project that includes new lighting and pavements has left retailers with a downturn in trade and disruptions to their business since last July. The project was costed at $3.6 million, but with rising costs on project scope changes approved by Frankston City Councillors, the project has blown out in budget to just under $500,000. Traders and locals are up in arms with the splurge, believing the money could be put to better use. Frankston City Mayor Councillor James Dooley makes no apologies for the costs of the improvements. He believes something had to be done to beautify the precinct and return customers to Frankston. Here's the Mayor's positive response to the negativity surrounding the Wells Street project, starting with the cost of 11 bench seats totalling $150,000 alone.
Yes, you would say they are quite expensive. People still say, yeah, it's okay, it's a waste of money, you could have spent it on something else. I've got to set the scene for the circumstances, how we came to this decision. 4 years when we came into council was in extreme debt. And the council, we had basically $25 million had been spent on the aquatic centre. There was another $10 million spent on the Stephenson's Road landfill. And then there was another $6 million, $7 million we had to spend on a call on defined benefits. So we were $40 million out the back door straight away. And we came in and there's no investment going on in Frankston. People are panicking. We're getting emails from traders and landlords every week talking about vacancy rates and the destruction of trading in Frankston. And so the council said, right, we've got to do something. So we hit our operational budget very heavily. And over 3 years, we came up with $20 million worth of savings without loss of services. In fact, we've probably added to services, as you can see through the lack of graffiti in Frankston. But we saved $20 million. We said, right, we've got to invest this in projects that will change the conversation around Frankston. We built the Yacht Club, and hopefully we'll get the lease signed for that shortly. Wells Street, we got $1.7 million from the state government, which we had to match $1.7 million. That was an unusual arrangement in that we got the money before we did the scope. In a real world, we would have basically scoped it first, worked out that it was going to be costing more like $5 million, and then started the work. So it wasn't so much a cost overrun, it was basically a expansion of the scope. The point was with Wells Street is we basically had to change the conversation and bring hope back where there was despair. So we started doing the project, and we thought, right, if we're going to do this, do it properly. Don't do a half-assed job. Otherwise, you might not have done it at all. So let's basically put some good things in there. This is our good room. This is our town square. This is the heart of Frankston. let's make sure that it looks good and it basically brings people in, makes them feel good about their city. So, yes, some of those particular pieces are quite expensive, but they're good. And I can tell you now that since we've basically done the paving, the sales figures for, certainly I know for Bayside, those areas, the shops owned by Bayside, they've gone up quite considerably and they're more than pleased with the works that have been done. As such, look, we don't get emails from landlords anymore complaining about how their business, their investments are going to the wall. We don't get that panic anymore. There is some annoyance from some traders that, yeah, sure, they basically had some tough times. But if we did nothing, I tell you now, the times would have been much tougher for them. And we know that. We know that it would have been bad. And it's got to be remembered as well. 4 years ago, we didn't have Peninsula Link. And there was a lot of trade coming down. But when they opened Peninsula Link, we lost 60% of the traffic coming down Nepean Highway. And that was 60% of traffic that was no longer coming to the city centre to buy goods anymore. Now that's changing. And there was complete despair. So we had to do something. And I really make no apology for the fact that we've turned that despair around.
Make up your own mind whether it was necessary to spend that sort of money to improve the city of Frankston. Take a trip early spring and have a look. Now to our last story of the day. Would you take your kids swimming in winter? And we find out whether Mornington Peninsula Councillor of Cerberus Ward, David Garnock, wears board shorts or budgie smugglers when he swims to raise funds for MS. Remember when Mum wouldn't let you swim in the cold months because you'd catch a cold? Well, we're here to tell you that this myth has been busted. Julia Wood, swim manager from the Peninsula Aquatic Recreation Centre in Frankston, tells us it's beneficial for our health to swim in winter, especially for children. She starts with...
I think that because people do become sick in the winter period and there's more prevalence of colds and fevers and illnesses in the winter period, I think parents make an association that because the child has been to the pool, then it must have come from the pool and so they must therefore have become sick through swimming.
Are kids willing to get out into the water in colder months? Like they may be saying to their parents, oh, it's too cold, don't put me in bathers, because the association with bathers is warm weather, yep, down at the beach. Mm. So do you think it could be the other way around?
It probably comes from the parents. Children are very happy to go out and do activity. I mean, let's face it, they go out in all weathers to do junior footy and all of the winter sports there. So coming into the pool, it's not a cold environment. The pools are heated, the building generally around 30 degrees inside. I think it stems quite often from the parents and not wanting to go out on a colder evening and putting that thought perhaps into the child's mind.
Julia explains the benefits for children swimming in colder months.
The benefits for continued learning, regardless whether that's cold months, so they would keep swimming throughout the year, is obviously continued learning. If one takes a break in one's education and or the lessons that they're taking, then the learning goes backwards. So when a child stops for winter, as many of them do, for the next 10 weeks, the rest of the children who've continued will go forward in leaps and bounds. And when the child comes back again, they're not necessarily in the same class. So it does enhance learning. It also builds their immune systems as well. So if we shelter our children from all the germs that are around, then when they're exposed to them, they'll build up a resistance to that.
I think we do model coddle our children a little bit too much these days. They're going into heated classrooms, heated homes, and you see advertisements on television saying, you know, Dettol this and Dettol that because of germs. But really, we're not doing them any favours, really, are we?
I believe we can be too clean with what we're doing. And when we grew up, we just did what we did. And, you know, if a piece of food fell on the floor, you picked it up, just got on with everything that you had to do. But yes, parents generally seem to mollycoddle their children a little bit more and try and just keep them protected from everything rather than letting them have a go at things that they might enjoy.
Swimming would have to give them more confidence too.
Yes, obviously when they're doing ongoing lessons, then their confidence increases. And the more you keep them in a situation where you're teaching them water safety skills, the more they're going to become confident. If we take them away and we put into them that if you stop in winter, you know, we have to stop in winter because that's what we should do. What happens if the child is out on, say, a farm? And I've heard a story like this. A child has been at a family farm and has fallen fully clothed into a dam. Fortunately, the child has been doing swimming lessons all the way through and was able to hold themselves up until they were rescued by an adult. So just because it's winter doesn't mean that children won't go near water and won't have an accident.
Yes, and school holidays are coming up too, so it's a good alternative and do some sort of activity rather than just staying in front of the heater on the computer.
For sure, and look, I come from the UK, and the one place that we would all go in the winter was to the pool because the pool was warm, the water was warm. It's good, cheap fun and entertainment in school holidays when outside is potentially cold, wet and miserable. And you can have a lot of fun at the pool with friends, families, just and engaging in activity as well, as you say, rather than being in front of the TV or on a computer or doing computer games. Children don't need to stop just because it's winter. We don't stop them going to school in winter. We don't stop them doing footy in winter. Why do we stop them doing swimming?
Park in Frankston is a great family-friendly place to go with children this school holidays. There's a free holiday program for all ages and swimming abilities. Get down and have some fun.
You're on RPP 98.7 and 98.3 on the peninsula.
While we're down at the pool, let's head down to Pelican Park in Hastings, where the MS 24-hour mega swim will be held in a couple of weeks to raise funds for MS. Mornington Peninsula Shire Mayor, Councillor Graham Pittock, and Shire Councillor of Cerberus Ward, David Garnock, will be partaking in the swim. Let's take a listen to what Councillor Garnock had to say.
Yes, I am. I've been involved with MS 24-hour mega swim for the last 4 years of its operation at the Pelican Park pool, but haven't participated myself up until now, not feeling sort of all that sort of confident in my own swimming ability. I'm now in training and try to swim every second or third day for a kilometre at least, just to build up the strength necessary for what is a fairly epic long swim, you know, over a full 24-hour period.
Well, the reward at the end of it's going to be fantastic. Do you know how much money you've raised individually so far?
No, I personally don't know the stats on how much money has been raised so far. I think you can find it on the website, but I haven't actually gone there yet, so I'll go and have a look later on. But
so it's in its fifth year, as you said, so the MS Mega Swim event.
Yeah.
In the past, they've raised more than $87,000, which is fantastic for a little pool down in Hastings, isn't it?
It certainly is, yes. So I think last year it was about $19,000. And I know we are hoping to raise in the order of 25,000 this year. But
how long will you be swimming? Because you're partaking with the Mayor Graham Pittock.
Yeah.
How are you both going to go in the pool, do you think?
At this stage, we've only got a team of six, so it means we're going to do a hell of a lot of swimming. Teams can be up to 15 people, and I think the really professional teams will have every one of those 15 places taken. And that means that, and of course every team must have one swimmer in the water for the entire 24 hours. And it's up to each team how they run that endurance event. But most teams, I believe, have their swimmers swim in relays of 15 minutes each. So for a team of 15 swimmers, they'll each be swimming 1.6 hours total over the 24-hour period in 6 or 7 15-minute segments. A team of six, we're going to be swimming every 1.5 hours for 15 minutes. And we're going to have to swim about 10.7 kilometres each. That will be very, very hard. And so I'm hoping that people will come and join me and the mayor in the councillor team. It's called the councillors team, and boost our numbers up to 15 if we can.
Yeah, so I think you need that.
Spread the love around a bit.
Yeah, that's right. Are you a board shorts man or are you a budgie smuggler man?
I must admit, I'm a board shorts man most of the time, certainly out in public at beaches and things like that. But when it comes to long distance swimming, you want to be as slick as you can through the water. And so I'm definitely a budgie smuggler man. And I think you'll find every single bloke who's swimming, seriously that is, will be wearing budgie smugglers on the night.
Oh, well, there you go. Good luck.
Why not join the councillors' team to raise funds for MS? Deborah Maher reporting there. Well, that's all we've got time for this week. If you have any news from the street you want to share with our team, please contact RPPFM on 5975 1234. Next week, Eye on the Peninsula will again bring you up to date with issues that matter to you. We hope you can tune in next Tuesday at noon on 98.7 or 98.3 FM Frankston. You can live stream from our website, rppfm.com.au, and download the RPPFM app. If you miss any Eye on the Peninsula programs, podcasts are available on our website, and check out the Eye on the Peninsula Facebook page. Thank you to Deborah Maher, executive producer of Eye on the Peninsula, ministers and guests, and Kevin Wilcox, our news researcher. Don't forget to vote this Saturday. We'll leave you with the Australian Greens leader, Janet Rice, summing up her speech at the Dunkley Vote Solar Forum held in Frankston last night. I'm Piers Cunningham. Thanks for your company.
We just can't continue this way. We are indeed in an emergency to be stopping global warming in its tracks. So that means no new coal mines, no expansion of fossil fuels.